Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. Gorgeous, and it glows in the Fukushima radiation sense of the word, which is great for the economy because everybody now has a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, hey, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. My very special guest, who also has a very good sense of humour, is Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com. Suzanne, welcome back to the program.
Hello, it's been forever.
Yeah, it's been like a day or two. Now, there's also the element, what were we talking about last time? In fact, I'm uploading the video right now of our last stint together. We were talking about the Boston bombings. And you told me during that broadcast that you wanted to wait a couple of days for more evidence to come to light before you start making a judgment call. And I was wondering, has enough stuff come to light so far for you to make a judgment call?
I did post an article. It's up on Suzanne OccupyCorporatism.com. Lies and distractions abound as details surrounding the Boston bombing unfold. Because as I was looking, and folks, I looked through about 50 articles, and it wasn't just alternative media, and it wasn't just mainstream media, it was everybody. It was anybody who was writing about it, I took a look at it. And I found that there's so much garbage. There's so many stories. There's so many versions. There's the hat that the gentleman was wearing that had the Punisher skull that even the Grateful Dead had used as a emblem at a time. There's all sorts of stuff going on, but the whirling dervishes, all the little bunny trails that they want us to go down. And what was interesting to me was the mainstream has now gravitated toward the, quote, conspiracy theory version of the story. And whenever two worlds collide, I start to get very nervous.
Well, in what sense are they taking on the conspiracy theory side? Are the mainstream media actually saying, you know what, maybe the government did this to the people of Boston?
They're saying that two suspects are the two gentlemen that everyone saw all of these pictures at Infowars.com took from a bunch of people who started a on Reddit. They did their own investigation and they started analyzing photos and video and conducting their own independent forensic analysis, and InfoWars decided to take all of that hard work and post it up on their website, and so now they're getting all the accolades for all of that work. The pictures of the gentleman here and there, the bomb, the backpacks, the khaki pants, the boots that they're wearing, the connection to the craft, which is a Blackwater Academy type organization, the hired mercenaries that Chris Kyle worked for. Chris Kyle is the gentleman who was shot, not by a friend of his, like one of the alternative media outlets is reporting. Chris Kyle was working in tandem with a veterans outlet outreach kind of organization where they would take people who were having a really hard time psychologically and give them support and give them, you know, things to do, places to go, people to network with. And so Chris Kyle had invited this gentleman to a shooting range and the guy ended up shooting him. That's not a friend. It's kind of like a big brothers, big sisters kind of thing for veterans. It might seem like a minute detail, and it might seem like I'm grasping at straws mentioning that one aspect, but that's how propaganda works, folks. That's how disinformation works. They give you something, and they twist it, and they don't tell you the actual what's actually going on. All the garbage, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, about the Family Guy. I think that's just a little dust bunny that we can go down and search underneath our couches for that one penny that we left underneath there in 1976, and God only knows if it's still there. the point is that I was looking at the pictures of the people who were destroyed, you know, physically, the injuries, the people who passed away. That is horrible. It's horrible that two young women and an 8-year-old boy died. There are people who had such horrible injuries that it might be I hate to say it, but some of the pictures were just so horrible. And it reminds me of, I also wrote an article about the explosion at the fertilizer plant. And some of the people who were brought in to the Baptist Hospital near Waco, Texas, where the fertilizer plant exploded, they were saying, gosh, I'm really glad that I'm alive. Go ahead and take the leg, take the appendage, whatever it is. I'm just glad that I'm breathing. And I can see where the people who were injured in this bombing attack would obviously feel the same way. But there's, you know, the Daily Mail reported about a gentleman who, this is a very fuzzy picture of some guy standing on a rooftop. Who is that guy? You know, sometimes people have, in cities, sometimes the rooftop is a garden and people actually live, it's part of where they live. And so who knows what was going on there? But the fact of the matter is people are coming out and saying that because they used bombs to kill people, we have to take our guns.
Okay, so let me see if I got this straight. We'll provide an analogy, as it were. Somebody stabs somebody, and the government goes, oh my God, because somebody stabbed somebody, we've got to outlaw forks.
Yes. Well, it would be like rubber bands. Because I got stabbed with a pencil, with a number 2 pencil, we have to outlaw rubber bands.
Yeah, totally.
That doesn't make any sense. It's apples and oranges. You know, if you want to start outlawing things and be ridiculous about it, why don't you call up DHS and ask them why they bought 1,400 pounds of ammonium nitrate and all the other ingredients they would use to build a fertilizer bomb, one of these homemade concoctions that they could have used in the pressure cooker to blow up the building and the people at the Boston Marathon. Why don't we ask them? Why don't we outlaw that?
Why don't we outlaw the federal government while we're at it and go back to state government? I mean, hey, if the federal government was outlawed, it would actually prevent a whole lot of really nasty things from happening, wouldn't it? You know? Foreign wars.
Well, now you're talking about people being independent and having their own thought and being able to take care of themselves, and you know as well as I do that we can't do that.
Oh, goodness, I'm sorry. You know, independence, freedom, a lack of scumbaggery. It's just not the right thing for society at the moment, I think. We need more scumbaggery, more deception, and more completely unjustifiable things. Although, I was quite happy to hear that the so-called assault weapons ban or heavy background check thing was cancelled. And then, of course, every time the New World Order cancels something or doesn't win a vote in the Senate or whatever, they just go, well, despite the fact that we've been defeated and the people obviously don't want it, we're going to do it again. And again and again,
well, yeah,
and again until it does pass.
Vice President Joe Biden said, oh, don't worry about it. We'll just come out with some more executive orders. You know, we'll get this done. As he's wiping a tear away from his eye that he, you know, some saline that he put in his eye.
Yeah. You gotta be freaking kidding me. What is there's barely even any pretense of freedom in the federal government anymore, is there? This is all scumbaggery. Every single thing.
You know, they had Gabby Giffords, you know, she got shot in the head, and that was a false flag event, and they didn't actually kill her. They took her out, so now they're using her as a puppet for gun control. They had a gentleman who was the father, Mark Bearden, I think I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, who was standing on the front lawn of the White House along with the president and talking about how shameful it is and how he's going back empty-handed but not defeated. It has nothing to do with the amount of people who die in these mass shootings, the number statistically speaking is so small. It's ridiculous to say that, and most of these instances are traced back, in maybe immediately, maybe decades later, to a false flag event that was perpetrated by the government or people hired by the government. Yeah. Normally, people don't do these. Normally, what happens is you get mad at your wife or your girlfriend, and you cause a scene, and it's domestic disturbance. You don't go on a rampage and kill a bunch of people just because you got upset over something.
Well, unless you're on SSRI drugs.
That's another angle that'll, yeah.
That's true.
But even still, it usually affects, I am not. I'm naturally this crazy.
Yeah, well, thank you, lucky stars. Because the other alternative is, I need to be on anti-depression drugs because I'm really angry and they make me kill my family, go on shooting rampage, and then commit suicide.
Well, most of the time it happens to the people that are close to you. Over and over again, I've talked about this on your show and many other shows in my show. When you are on these mood stabilizers or altered states of mood, you end up killing the people that are most close to you, and you end up killing them for ridiculous reasons, whether you think that the devil is telling you to drown your five babies, or you're mad at your grandfather and your grandmother for disciplining you, so you shoot them in the face and burn the house down. It's not a mass shooting at a school. It's local, and it's indicative of what's going on with you right now, because when you're on these pharmaceuticals, you're in the moment and you are upset at what's going on right now. You don't sit there and plan out an entire mass murder because of something that happened to you 10 minutes ago.
Yep. Unless, of course, you're some kind of MK Ultra mind controlled patsy.
But again, it's the government.
Well, and here's the other interesting thing. Have you noticed that pretty much all of these mass shooters wind up having the exact same lawyer who represented Charles Manson or other well-known mind control victims?
Sure, yeah. And the psychiatrists, and they're all government psychiatrists. They all work for the military, like with James Holmes.
Now, can it be any more obvious? I don't know about you, but every time I hear about anything anywhere in the United States that seems violent and is reported by the media overly, okay, because that's really the key here to me, because otherwise I probably wouldn't hear about it. I just think instantly, government. Girlfriend comes in one day and she tells me, Vinny, did you hear about the car bomb that was in Times Square that they defused? And I go, don't worry, baby, it's probably the FBI, after not looking at it, and it frickin' was. And, Vinny, did you hear about the shooting and such and such and blah, blah, blah? And I was like, oh, don't worry, man. It's probably just some kind of a false flag event with multiple shooters, in order to demonize people and get everybody's guns off them. It's like, sure enough, that's what it turns out to be. You just basically assume the worst. And that is actually the most horrific part about watching the news, is that I'll be so cynical and assume the worst. And most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time I'll be 100% correct without looking at any evidence of any kind. Like, it's that frickin' predictable. Yeah. When was the last time these people came up with a new game plan?
They don't have to. It works. If it's not broken, don't fix it. If we still fall for it, it's take it to the micro level. If you've got a kid who's continuously doing something and he knows that eventually he'll break you down, you're going to get the same behavior every single day. It's the same thing in a relationship. If they know that they can treat you like crap, they're going to continue to do it, and they're going to up the ante. It's the government's treating us like we're children.
And for the most part, I think we are.
I agree.
The public's still falling for it, as you so eloquently put it. Great. So the public's morons. They haven't got the ability to figure out things that are so frickin' obvious that you can just make assumptions, blind assumptions without evidence, and be correct, and they'll still believe it. I just... How exactly could we get this out? I think this is the reason why it's so important to wake people up to false flag terrorism, don't you? Because, hey, once that person in that relationship, once that parent knows what this kind of behavior is supposed to be accomplishing, then you suddenly no longer tolerate it, and every time you see it, whoosh, backhand, down on the floor. That's right. Not putting up with any of your emotional blackmail, not putting up with any of your false flag terrorism. That'd be great.
Absolutely. And the people who are awake, they need to take the next step and yes, we get it, it's a false flag, like you say all the time. Now what are they going to do with this? Because the Sandy Hook shooting didn't work. Let's see if we blow people up, if we can take their guns.
Right. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen, with Suzanne Posel, OccupyCorporatism.com.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream. Just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president, it seemed. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It was Bill Hicks, I think, you know, who would have made a great president of the United States? Bill Hicks. Imagine it. There would be a massive government subsidy for the production of pornography. Tax on cigarettes would be reduced massively. Every drug would have been legalized. Man, President Hicks. Imagine it. All right, anyway, back to serious issues about people getting blown up. Now, it's so cynical of the government to use the deaths of children. Like, just think about the mentality of this, okay? And I'm sure most of the people listening won't understand this mentality because you're not criminal sociopathic scum. You murder an innocent child, and then you wave that dead innocent child in front of everybody in order to get all those stupid people didn't know that you were the killer to do what you want, which is give up their guns so that you can orderly kill them too. That's the mentality that we're really dealing with here. You know, imagine the worst kind of horror movie or the most psychopathic character you could ever conceive of. That's the government. 10 times as worse as you could ever imagine. Worse than anybody's ever put on film. That's the government. Understand.
And that's what people don't get.
Well, yeah. It's because they'd have to be insane in order to understand that mentality.
Absolutely. And most people, they get upset. They might lash out. But we don't actually kill anyone. The idea of killing someone, even the idea of being around a dead body, is so horrifying to everyone. It's a natural response. But these people do it on a daily basis, and they don't care. And they laugh. They laugh every time you buy their products that are killing you. They laugh every time you show up at the doctor's office and you put in that request from your insurance company to get this therapy that's going to ultimately kill you anyway, and you're spending all of your money on it, and then when you die, they're going to just acquire your estate to help pay for it or terrorize your family to help pay for your medical bills. And they laugh the whole time.
They actually do find it amusing, don't they, to kill, to maim, to destroy people's lives, like an inside joke. You ever done that, Suzanne? You know, where you're in on the joke, but somebody else isn't, and you just laugh your ass off. Like, I think there's the remake of Red Dawn that I saw, and they go out and they kill a deer, and he says to him, you know, you've got to drink the blood of the deer. You know, first kill, it's tradition. And so he goes, oh, okay then. And he drinks the blood, and then they both start laughing at him. He's, you know, why, don't you know what it, and they say, what does it taste like? He goes, well, don't you know? And they go, no, we never drink that stuff, man. You know, and they laugh at him. And that's basically what we're doing here. Most of the time, whenever you're listening to these politicians speak, and it's, I don't know, like, I either scream very angrily whenever I hear these kind of political speeches, or I just laugh uncontrollably, because those are really the only sane responses I can come up with. I mean, to go, yes, Obama's right, we need to take the guns off the children, that seems like frickin' insanity to me, right? And it just doesn't swing with me, generally.
When I saw the pictures of the people who were maimed and they had their legs blown off, that one gentleman, I couldn't imagine being in that person. And like I mentioned before, people were grateful to just be alive. Go ahead and take the leg or the arm from me. I'm just grateful that I'm still breathing. And this happens all the time. In 9/11, those people who died in 9/11 were guilty of getting to work on time. That's all. 3,000 people in New York. Just go ahead and kill them. And who cares? We're going to go over to another country and drone thousands of people every single day, and nobody's ever going to talk about it. I see the pictures on Facebook all the time of the little children that they line up, and they're all dead, 3-, 4-, 5-year-old children. Most of them are civilians. These are not targets. Are you telling me that a 5-year-old is a target that you need to drone?
I think it's like blood sacrifice, you know, like some kind of, if you look into the occult and the mentality of these New World Order slime, man, they are totally, totally evil. Like, they actually love, and they kind of, I'm not sure if they even get some kind of a sexual pleasure out of seeing children blown apart and murdered and cut up and put into pieces and just, yeah, oh, how you get such pleasure out of it. Just disgusting. Riff people. No interest in common good of humanity of any kind. This is who we're letting rule us. Rule us. And have no options. Yeah, only have scumbags. You know? I was thinking John Kerry being what's he now? The Secretary of State or something like that? I remember that scumbag way back in the day when he was running against his cousin George W. Bush in the election. And, saying, oh, wow, I wish I could show you something secret about my secret society connections and stuff like that. You know, it really is a freaking inside joke. They're sitting there, setting us up, killing us, playing with our heartstrings so that they can deal a final blow to anything that's of value, anything that is quintessentially American, is an antithesis to these people. You know, you got those real nice Americans who are very friendly, help you out, that kind of thing. No, these people won't help you out. They'll pop a cap in your ass as they roll by and laugh as you bleed out on the sidewalk and die.
Right, and the other alternative is that you live your entire life trying to obtain things on credit, money you don't have, buying things from people that you don't care about. And you're doing this every 3 months. It's a cyclical thing. You're programmed to do this. You go to your slave job, and you're miserable, and you get treated like garbage. You come home, and all you want to do is eat your fast food and your GMO and get your programming before you go to bed and sleep in a box, you know, in your apartment building next to neighbors that you don't like. And you live in this horrible reality every single day. And all you actually look forward to is spending that debt currency, that mind screw that we call money. And that's your only outlet. And people wonder why they're never happy and they're never satisfied. And it doesn't matter what you obtain. You're still miserable.
Well, Edward Bernays figured this out a long time ago. You know, he's like the father. He actually wrote the book Propaganda, literally. And he figured out that you can entice people into purchasing products in the belief that those products will make their life better and will secure them eternal happiness. And yet, once they purchase said product that is told to them that it'll make them happy and make them better people or whatever, they suddenly realize, hey, I'm not actually that satisfied, so I've got to go out and buy another product that won't satisfy me. Cyclical, as you're saying. You endlessly, endlessly search for ways to placate yourself and stop yourself from becoming a better person. Isn't that sad? You know?
I'm really sad
about that, man.
When you go out into the world, you go out to buy something, you get mad at the cashier. You get mad at the people that you have to wait in line because the light turned green and they didn't automatically step on the gas to get you to your destination fast enough, to where you're going to complain about the waitress at the restaurant anyway, and you're going to start a fight with your wife or your significant other, and you're going to yell at your kids. And this is the misery that we live in and day out. And this is the good life. That's the good life. The really egregious part is you may be just walking down the street and part of a false flag and not realize it. You might be a good, responsible person and show up to work on time, and the entire building is exploded, and you die.
You might get kidnapped while walking to school and sacrificed in front of a bunch of old men who get their rocks off while they torture you. You never know. We're just livestock, basically. Like, I remember chickens walking around on my farm and stuff like that. I don't have any idea that they're food, you know, walking around.
Mm-hmm.
And you're dead, okay? No clue whatsoever. Frickin' livestock. That's what we are, okay? And I think that we're so selfish and nihilistic that we refuse to believe it because of the fact that it's a horrible realization. Maybe even because of the fact that we've been so used to lies that we don't even recognize what the truth is anymore.
Exactly. And then I constantly ask myself, so what is truth? Because I see that two suspects were seen in videotape and in photographs being part of this false flag that happened in Boston. And then I'm reading on The Smoking Gun that these people were one of them was a track coach and the other gentleman was there to participate, and they were spectators, they were watching. And so what is truth? I think that word needs to be thrown out. I don't know. I know that everything is a lie. I know that, but I don't know what truth is.
Just assume that everything's the opposite, right? Basically, that's what I've determined is truth. If everything that you're told is the direct opposite of what you're told. Okay, so you go to the doctor. The doctor says, take this vaccine, it'll help you. So you go, take this vaccine, it'll kill me eventually 40 years down the track with a cancer virus. Okay, no thank you. You go to a lawyer and you say, you have to pay me $1,700 an hour in order to get you off this charge. And you go, actually he's going to charge me $1,700 an hour to plead guilty. So I'm not going to have him anymore, and I'm going to have to defend myself. And it gets to the point where you realize that you've built your life up on all these lies, and all these lies are so convenient and easy to believe, right? It's actually a challenge to think that it's all, that you're living in opposite land, because then all of the rules that you used to follow, all of the logical processes inside your head suddenly become totally askew, and you're not the same person you were, and you can't go back to being that person you were either. And some people try, right? I'm sure you've known and seen a bunch of people, Suzanne, that have learned all this stuff and want to go back into the matrix. Like, quite literally, they want to be plugged back into the power plant, drinking beer, working for nothing, and never wind up with anything to pass on to their children with perpetual debt. I don't understand that mentality.
Well, when my website came down, that was one of the big questions I asked myself. I spend all of this time digging into information that I could be spending with my children and my husband. And I provide this service to people so that they can wake up or take the information and go past me or try and figure out what the flip is going on. And I'm wasting precious moments because if everything crashes, I don't have any of those memories. I can't get that time back. And I was just talking with James at the Prepper Podcast in the last hour. We were talking about the worst case scenario. And that's a really, really hard life, folks. And I've had a small, small, minute taste of what it's like to have no television, barely any electricity. You have to make all of your food from scratch. You have to depend on the guy next to you in order to get your food. And it's a really, really hard life. And there's a lot of trust that goes on in that. And we don't want to go back there. But they want us to just, it's not enough for them that we're batteries supplying the energy that they need. They want us dead. They're sick of it. They want to exterminate us. So what do you say to somebody who's trying to kill you?
You know, and the threat's not right in front of your face, like with a gun or something like that. It's a needle in your arm, or it's a pill in a bottle, or it's a distracting television show like X Factor or something like that. These are the things that are killing us, right? A slow death by scumbaggery. It's a really terrible, terrible world we live in most of the time. But despite that, I comprehend differently that there's really good people in this really bad world who can overthrow these scum. And it's happened every single time that some kind of tyrannical scumbag has risen to dominate society. It gets overthrown at some point and everybody goes back to freedom. Okay? We refresh from time to time, right? Like the Tree of Liberty. It must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. Because patriots die when they're taking down the tyrants. We'll be right back after the break with Suzanne Posel, OccupyCorporatism.com.
Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the Chateau de Rothschild, where we produce very, very nice good wine that we use to drug small children after we kidnap them through our Child Protective Service buddies. Welcome back, my very special guest, Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com.
All right, now... I love The Godfather. You know, how could you not? How could you not? Speaking of which, it occurs to me that these times that we're living in right now are probably some of the most unique throughout human history, but maybe that's just the arrogance of youth talking. Because, you know, I have a look back and, you know, you think about these great leaders that have unleashed untold amounts of suffering and conquering, you know, like Genghis Khan, Hitler, Stalin, and Mao, and Alexander the Great, and goodness knows how many other people are out there that have basically led a whole bunch of people that are under their boot heel in order to kill a whole bunch of other people. And then make those other people under your boot heel and then recruit them to be your new soldiers and then go off and attack even more people and so on and so forth. It's like this this perpetual renewing of servitude, basically. You use your slaves to enslave other slaves, to replace the slaves that you lost while you were busy enslaving the next lot of slaves. Hmm? Does that resonate with anybody?
We've got this psychology going on where we enslave each other. We admonish each other for these things that we don't think are right or good because it doesn't follow with what society says is good or right. And on a small level, we attack our friends and we attack our family, and our family attacks us and our friends attack us, and we keep each other in line just so that we can keep this machine going. It's brilliant what they've accomplished, and they've been able to do this for centuries. Every time there's a civilization, there's no civility in civilization, because they take all of the community and they take all of the caring for one another and making sure that each person has what they need and what is necessary for life, and they take that and they monetize that and they control whether or not you live or die on every single facet or every level of existence. And
yeah.
They do this throughout the centuries.
See, this reminds me of a film called God Bless America. Have you ever seen this movie? Every truther should see God Bless America. It's freaking brilliant. It's about a dude who goes on a killing spree. You know all those really annoying people on television that you think, you know, why hasn't somebody killed those people? Well, this guy goes on a killing spree to take out all the bad people that he sees on American television, providing a bad example to people. It's got some really great rants in it. It's done by the comedian Bobcat Goldthwait. And I got a little 1 minute rant from the film here. Would you like to hear?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would defend their freedom of speech to tell uninspired, bigoted, blowjob, gay-bashing, racist, and rape jokes all under the guise of being edgy. But that's not the edge. That's what sells. They couldn't possibly pander any harder or be more commercially mainstream, because this is the "oh no, you didn't say that" generation, where a shocking comment has more weight than the truth. No one has any shame anymore, and we're supposed to celebrate it. I saw a woman throw a used tampon at another woman last night on network television, a network that bills itself as Today's Woman's Channel. Kids beat each other blind and post it on YouTube. I mean, do you remember when eating rats and maggots on Survivor was shocking? It all seems so quaint now. I'm sure the girls from Two Girls, One Cup are going to have their own dating show on VH1 any day now. I mean, why have a civilization anymore if we no longer are interested in being civilized?
Now, isn't it like what you said just before, Suzanne, about how civilization is not civilized?
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember when there were actual sitcoms, you know, The Cosby Show and ALF and things like that, you saw a family and you saw people getting along and working out their problems, and then they put closed-circuit TV in Big Brother, and all of a sudden everybody wants to see the worst side of everyone to justify their hatred for everything and everyone around them. And then we just keep popping this out. And what's the greatest part of watching American Idol? It's not the show. It's the beginning, when all of the idiots go up there and they get emasculated on national television, and then they go and they cry or they kick a can or they get upset about not making it to the next level. That's the best part. That's sick that we think that it's cool when people get hurt emotionally or physically, and it sets a tone for the mentality of our society that we are not, we're not empathetic toward each other. And our handlers, the ones who are controlling everything, they have no empathy. So if I don't care about you and you don't care about me, then the sky's the limit on what we're going to do to each other. And we can go ahead and take each other out, and they don't even have to do anything.
Yeah, we're kind of playing into their hands in so many ways. How can you deal with this? And this is the reason why a lot of truthers do start going nuts, okay? Anybody who says that there aren't crazy conspiracy theorists out there, that person is a disinfo agent. Trust me. Learning this information can and does drive people insane. All right? You cannot avoid the possibility. Right? At the very least, you'll get depressed. You know, I suffered bad depression suddenly learning that 9/11 was an inside job, that everything that I hoped for in my life was a lie, that the police weren't there to help me or anything like that. You know, just really, really, really sad, because you get your whole life and all your expectations, and it's like you're full of promise as a kid, you know, and all of a sudden somebody's telling you, there ain't no Santa Claus. You know, how do you recover from that? And I'm not sure if any of us really have, because we're still living under the fricking system full of scumbags and fricking sociopaths and uncaring people who just walk around and don't really contribute anything. And then they come up to the people who are contributing and they tell them that they're stupid and they should go back to watching fricking American Idol and drinking more beer, you know? What the hell's going on here? How can people tolerate this? We've just been lulled into the sense that actually caring about people, that doing the right thing is actually not worth the effort anymore. Like, we've gone from the societal bliss from maybe the early 1900s or something like that, with a nuclear family and everybody working together and the father's the head of the household and the mother takes care of the kids, and now all of a sudden, hey, it's all a free-for-all. And now women aren't even concerned about getting kids anymore. Something like 78% of women who go to higher education systems don't even wind up having a child at all, okay? It's just really, really freaking nasty out there, man. Family units being destroyed. The cops are so freaking corrupt that they'll literally just chuck a bag of cocaine in the back of your nice car that they feel like they want, so they just steal it from you, okay? Open freaking criminality. Massive quantities of huge chemicals being dumped into the water supply every single freaking day because it's good for your teeth. And lithium and frickin' Prozac and all these other derivatives from all these pills that everybody's on because they can't frickin' tolerate the life that they're living in itself, that they've got to have some kind of drug to frickin' escape from it. And then they piss that away into the water supply. And then everybody else who has a really bad life gets free drugs! Are you kidding me? What the hell is going on? How can we tolerate this? It's so bad that I don't think people will ever understand truly how bad it is. I don't know how to get over this, other than overthrowing these frickin' scumbags and restoring some freedom, some justice, some liberty. Something that is actually of value to the world. What is it about me that's different from all of the other slaves out there who don't want to do anything, literally don't want to do anything? Is it because they doubt themselves? Is it because they think that maybe if one person does something, that it'll accomplish absolutely nothing? There is no evidence for that. All the evidence points to one person changing the world, invariably. Whether they be a tyrant or a savior, one person usually is the person who makes the difference. One person who says, you know what? I don't care how things really are. This is how I want them to be, and I will not stop until things are the way they are supposed to be. The New World Order scumbags and just saying, hey, that we think the way things are supposed to be is complete and utter fucking tyranny, with everybody completely and utterly mind-controlled, enslaved, and poisoned so that they're completely ineffective to resist us in anything that we do. I think they might win if we believe their BS. They might win if we believe our own BS. Because our BS is theirs. It's like been implanted in our minds to instill doubt. To instill some kind of anger at other people who have never done anything to us. And love for the governments and institutions that rape us in some way, shape or form every single day. Wake up! If you're not awake, jeepers creepers, heaven help you, wake up! I'm not going to try and force you, I can't. Just understand how bad things are and how much worse they could possibly get if you do nothing. Get out today, do something, anything, just don't do nothing. We'll be right back after the break. At the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
virus, alert the masses.
Everyone's asleep.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. I can assure you that it is a lot of work and many a sleepless night just hosting 10 hours a week of radio and then doing it all the archiving, audio archiving and video archiving alike. It's a lot of work, and I'm so exhausted. And on top of that, you know, had these PayPal problems and things of that nature, which really screwed me. But they've all been sort of resolved now. At least the option is now available to donate to the Vinnie Eastwood Show through PayPal again. So that if you could do that, that would be really, really handy. Financial times are really, really stressed for everybody. I know, but we've got a real problem getting the rent together. So basically, we're down to zero, and we managed to pay the rent just pay the rent this week. So if you are capable of contributing in some way to what I'm doing to help the truth movement, you know, giving people the coverage they deserve, providing a little bit of light humor, perhaps a little bit of enlightenment somewhere or here or there. I don't want to be arrogant about it, but Frank, I do what I do, and it's really, really helpful to some people. I get emails all the time, and it occurs to me that I actually am helping some people. Some people actually get it when I'm talking, you know, and actually go on to start up their own websites and radio shows. I think I've inspired like maybe half a dozen new people to start up a radio show since I started mine nearly 3 years ago. So, I have no ability to do any of it at all, without the continued support of the listeners. This is why I consider you all my employers. If you tell me to do something, if you criticize me, if you want me to interview somebody, I will do it. And I'll go, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay. You're the ones who are basically the reason for my existence. Okay. I'm just a voice in the wilderness, if not for you. That's how much value you have to me. And if you're capable of contributing $1 a month, $5 a month, $20 a month, or make a big donation of $100, now would be good. Now would be really, really good. I need a lot of subscribers to make up for the 70, 80, 90-odd people who canceled their subscriptions when the last PayPal thing happened. Okay? Really, just imagine all of your income that you've been building up for years just suddenly disappears like that overnight, and you've got to suddenly somehow get it all back. And I cannot get it back without you, the loyal, wonderful, supportive listeners that have allowed me to do this for all these years so far. So please go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com homepage and subscribe for a regular monthly amount. It's pretty easy. There's a subscribe button and a buy now button. You know, you can either do a once-off donation, or if you want to contribute regularly so that it's just, you know, out of sight, out of mind, and you know that you're going to get commercial-free archives out of it, stuff like that. I make sure that they're up pretty much every day. I very much appreciate it. It's absolutely necessary right about now. I hate having to reiterate it, but yeah, the situation is what it is, and I have to do what I can in order to correct it, if it's at all possible. Suzanne Posel, you're still there.
Yes.
I got on a bit of a rant just there. You know, sometimes the just living in reality, and every real adult feels this. just living in reality is a very, very harsh thing to deal with. Okay? Just knowing what's going on is a lot of pressure on your mind. And quite frankly, I don't know how I've been dealing with it. You know? What about you?
I look at my children. I play with them. I spend time when I sit down to homeschool my son. I don't sit there and make him answer every single thing. We do it together. It's not important to me. There's always the booklets that I buy for him that are pre-approved by the state. Always have these stupid tests at the end of each chapter, and I either skip over it or do the answers with him. Like I said, this weekend I played for 4 hours hide and seek with my 2.5-year-old who doesn't quite understand hide and seek. She kept going to the same spot over and over again. But that's what I do. I spend time with my husband, and we do whatever. When the kids go to bed, he reads and plays games with my son, and I play with our daughter until it's time to go to bed, and then we put them down, and we just spend time together. And that's how I cope with it, because without them, I would be absolutely nuts. I would have no reason to live, knowing what I know. There's got to be something. There's got to be a light at the end of the tunnel. And for me, it's my family. And it makes me appreciate them even more than I ever did before, because I know that the possibility of all of these memories, we might not have the amount of time that our lifetime would allow us to accrue a lifetime of memories. If things keep going the way that they're going, we're going to see this within my lifetime. And I, if I'm going to live in an Agenda 21 megacity with all of my food and my water rationed to me and my worth based on what I produce into the society, and if I don't comply, I get cut off, at least I'd like to sit there in my shoebox and remember a time when it wasn't this way, when we played outside and played hopscotch and had sidewalk chalk and played and climbed trees and had a good time.
Do you think it's maybe because kids have still got potential? They're not as worn down and depleted as adults usually are?
Yeah, because everything, their whole life happens in a day. They have no sense of time, and they know that tomorrow's coming. My son starts to understand that certain things happen on certain days, like on Thursdays I have my radio show, and maybe I have something scheduled during the week and show up on other people's shows. But other than that, you know, he has no sense of time unless he doesn't know that what Friday means or what Saturday means or what Monday means. It doesn't matter in his world. And my daughter has zero sense of time. Everything happens. Her whole life happens in one day, and it starts over again the next day. And I try to bring that perspective into myself to forget that this stuff is happening, because otherwise, like you always say, you'll go freaking nuts.
Maybe it's kids are living in the now, and that's what we're all supposed to do, but we get taught and by the state-approved curriculum to not think in the now, to think about the future. What was I looking at? It was an episode of American Dad last night about these two kids, entering into a spelling bee competition and the conflict between their mothers, because both of their mothers were pressuring their kids, you know, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, otherwise you'll never get into a good college or whatever. And the pressure starting from about, you know, as a child, you know, as a real baby, you know, you got to do such and such extracurricular activities. You've got to be multilingual. You've got to be this, that, and the other. When the frack do kids even have time to play, be free, be kids if their parents are bloody controlling them all the time, you know? And it's just complete and utter insanity. And the other element here is, I think the kids who grow up forget that they used to be kids. They forget what it used to be like, because they've lived it all in that day over and over again.
can't get it back. A friend of mine once said to me, you know, Vinny, my 4-year-old came over to me one time and he says, Dad, what happened to yesterday? And he went, man, that's pretty deep for a 4-year-old.
We have a kitchen table that my mother-in-law gave us, and it's real wood, and somebody made it. She got it from us, a garage sale, and we were so grateful to have it because it's such a nice piece, and we know that somebody handmade it. And then my daughter got a hold of my son's crayons and started drawing all over it. And then my son started drawing all over it, too. And my first reaction was, oh, my God, they just ruined the table. And then I thought, you know, years from now, maybe we'll just take the top of this table off and make a piece of art out of it after years of them doodling on top of this table that was, you know, made. And that'll be a representation of their childhood to me. And I can look at that and say, oh, I remember when my children were 6 and 2 and they just, you know, did this. And then later on that day, my daughter took a purple crayon, you know, George in the purple crayon, or Harold in the purple crayon, and she starts drawing on the wall above the couch. And she looks at me and says, who did this? Look at this. Oh, my God. Who did this? Oh, dear. And I said, you did it. And she laughs and says, yeah, I did that. And my husband came home, and he was all upset that, you know, she drew on the wall. And I thought, I took a picture of it. I have it in my phone. It's actually it's saved in my phone. I use it as the wallpaper sometimes on my phone just to look at it. Because who cares? It's crayon. Who cares if something gets messed up? You know, when you break stuff, we get all upset because we spend all this time saving up this money to buy the stuff. And we keep amassing all this stuff. And then if something breaks, we scream at each other because it breaks. Why don't we just sit back and say, oh, well, that's a good opportunity to maybe replace it with something else. We don't have to always look at everything that happens in our life in a negative light. We could look at it and say, oh, well, that's changed. Okay, now I can do something else. My son gets a toy, and the first thing he does is he takes it apart so he can build something else. And my husband and I get mad, and we're like, oh, you know, we're not going to buy you any new toys because you keep breaking them. But my son is looking at this thinking, how can I improve upon this? How can I make this better? How does this work? How can I replicate it? We need to get back to this type of thought so that we stop getting so angry at our life and thinking that things are expendable and people are expendable and our lives are garbage. It's not. It's filled with a bunch of small moments that we can either look at positively or negatively, and that dictates the rest of our life. So what do you want? Do you want to be happy or do you want to be miserable?
Yeah, comes the simple choice, as Bill Hicks put it, between fear and love.
Yes.
Yeah. The voice of fear wants you to worry about your bank account and the state of things in your house and whether or not everything's clean and whether or not your children are going to the right high school and all of these other things. And the voice of love just goes, frack it. I'm having a laugh. I'm having fun, you know, as people aren't being hurt. That's cool, man, you know. Let's live life. Let's live it positive. Let's care about each other. Let's not worry about these little things or the things that are large but arbitrary. Level of education, for example, that's the biggest frickin' joke I've ever heard of. Somebody comes up to me, you know, saying, I've got such and such an educational degree, and, you know, they don't understand anything about anything. There's plenty of educated people out there who know heaps and are very, very bright people, but it wasn't their education that gave them that intelligence. It was actually their resistance to the education, yet the willingness to finish it and actually get the pieces of paper that really made them who they are. You know, my brother was telling me about university. He says, you know, when you go to university, they're going to tell you to do all this stuff. You know, tell you to take all these notes and read all these books and all of this sort of stuff. And you're going to have to do that for a couple of years. And then your learning begins after you get that piece of paper when you realize everything that they taught you was BS. Huh? Isn't that funny? You spend shockingly large amounts of thousands of dollars to get a piece of paper that only tells you that you're capable of putting up with BS for a number of years. I don't get that. I mean,
it is ridiculous.
whereas you have a look at the college conspiracy documentary. And talk to a number of millionaires on there. You know how they say that, oh, well, if you go to college, you're going to make an extra $1 million over your lifetime. That's only an extra couple of K a year, really, for losing 3 years of earning potential. You can't work full time, can't get your money, so that by the time you come out, instead of having a car that's all your own, you have a piece of paper that is massively, massively weighing you down with huge quantities of debt. And that's the system in a nutshell. Give you something useless and make you pay a huge amount for it and make you keep paying for it for the rest of your frickin' life while they dangle something shiny in front of you. It's a big scam. Everything's a scam. Everything's a scam. Just think about that.
I know. It blows my mind.
Yeah.
It blows my mind, yeah, because when I first woke up, I realized everything was a lie. And that one sentence made me sick for 2 weeks. I was just absolutely ill. I almost went into the hospital. I thought that I was actually getting physically ill. I thought I was dying. I thought that there was something wrong, that I had developed something and that I was going to die. Because everything is a lie. My husband and I love each other very much. It has nothing to do with a sheet of paper. It has nothing to do with the rings that we wear on our fingers. In fact, if we didn't have the rings on our fingers and we didn't have a sheet of paper, we would still love each other. We would still be together. But we have the sheet of paper, and now we're registered with the state, and we're registered with the country, and we're recognized as this. And because we're married, because we're legally married, if we wanted to get a divorce, we have to jump through all these hoops and pay all these people in order to do this. And we had to pay money to prove that we love each other. That had nothing to do with our relationship. I handed over information. I handed over when you have a baby, they cut the bottom of the foot of your baby and imprint the blood onto paper, like that's cool or something, and put it in a sealed bag and send it off to some weird, crazy place. And you have no control over that because you have to give birth in a hospital and that's just what they do. And they did all of this to my child while I was still, while they were sewing me back up from the C-section. I had no say in it. My husband had no say
in
it.
We'll be right back, folks.
The flight to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. I'll do a dessert, you prick. Give me that dessert. I have a Bloody Mary. Yeah, give me a whiskey sour. Yeah, give me whatever you got. Just more liquor, more liquor, more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go.
Welcome back.
You want to know what it's like?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We do like to have a few laughs here, but today, you know, it's kind of like a serious thing because I don't know how other people kind of woke up, but for me, it was anger that woke me up, you know, just rage at being deceived and righteous indignation, as it were. The ranting and the raving and the raging and the exposing of scumbaggery just kind of got me right the heck out of my comfort zone, which was sitting at home doing nothing, playing computer games, maybe watching free movies online or whatever, never producing anything that could really help or change anything, right? So, and because I chose to stop consuming and start creating, I became a better person, and I suddenly realized, hey, I can produce, I can create. This is a really interesting sensation, isn't it? That you don't suddenly, you're not really reliant on other people in order to make things, that don't currently exist. A lot of people have ideas and they say, oh, you know, I wish I could turn the TV on without getting off the couch, you know, back in the 70s before remotes. And then suddenly a guy that invents a remote or whatever. I think everybody gets the same ideas, right, about how to improve things and how to make things better, but they don't actually take the risk of trying to implement these ideas, trying to invent certain things. And you should not get stuck in that rut. Okay, before you know it, you'll be in your golden years, having worked your entire youth and the rest of your life away, only to have a 401k retirement plan that winds up getting stolen by the bankers, and so you're back to square one. Okay, start creating something. It doesn't matter what you're doing. Okay, if you're capable of tinkering with machines or toys, are you capable of wielding a paintbrush or a computer program? Are you capable of talking? Are you in possession of a megaphone? Have you got a sign that you can hold on a street corner? Everybody has to know these fundamental things. Chemtrails are real. 9/11 was an inside job. Vaccines are bioweapons. The government are lying scumbags. False flag terrorism happens all the time. That the police are simply the enforcers of the ruling class of scumbaggery. The Federal Reserve is a private institution. Basic, simple, fundamental truths. That you can just go onto a street corner and just with that one thing today, or whatever, whenever the conversation goes, holding up a sign. Okay? You don't have any idea how powerful that can really be and how many ripple effects actually happen. The difficulty is because it's random people who you don't know, strangers going past you all the time, you have no idea whether or not that resonates with them or whether or not they're going to go home and Google it. But I can guarantee you, people frickin' do. And occasionally, they take the time and effort to actually try and find that person who woke them up and say, hey, man, I saw you holding a sign that time and I did a bit of searching and yeah, man, it turns out it's all true. Okay? Just getting the truth out there weakens the stranglehold of lies that we've got over our entire society. If you expose those fundamentals, it means the mainstream media has less and less influence over the minds of men, and we need to set brush fires there. Because any one of these fundamentals that you wake up to usually splits you up and starts you searching all over the system for different other lies and what the truth and facts and historical evidence truly proves to you. And that is a ripple effect of just one person standing on a corner with a very, very cheaply made sign that he did in 5 minutes. Have you got 5 minutes and then maybe half an hour to stand on a street corner? I've done that many times by myself if necessary. Just help the situation. Sitting at home, talking with people who already know this, doesn't help the situation. Maybe I need to get off my ass more. You know? I got to ask myself that question as well. Sure, I'm doing a lot, but am I doing enough? Hell no. It's never enough. Just as long as you're not doing nothing, you know, keeps you stopped from feeling guilty and depressed over yourself. But hey, until the fat lady sings and these scumbaggery individuals are either exiled to Siberia or executed in public squares by a hanging after a trial by a jury of their peers. you know, to ensure that they're actually guilty, that their crimes are actually punishable by death, you know, for enslaving humanity, for stealing the world's wealth, for implementing covert bioweapon regimes on infants the world over. I think that's worthy of a death penalty. Don't you?
Absolutely.
Or even better solution. Well, I think it's a better solution. A lot of people might get angry for me for saying this. You just tell them, look, hand over all your power, hand over all the keys to all your mansions and stuff like that, and we'll give you your freedom. And you can live like a slave like the rest of us. But then again, They're total psychos. Scary people who will just murder innocent other people. There's no use for these people. Really, is there? You can't let them just live in their mansions and things like that and just sit back and go, you know what, we controlled the world once, but, you know, they figured out what was going on. And now we have to just live continuously in a life of luxury without committing any more scumbaggery. I doubt that's going to happen. But it would be nice if there was a peaceful transition of power and allow the people to rule and govern their own lives without the unwarranted influence of people who own the world. Really? What is ownership? You can't own people's lives. Sure, you can own private property and things of that nature because it's very finite. Maybe a chunk of land. Sure. Private property's been great. However, these people have amassed virtually the entire globe as their private property and every life form in it. They treat as though they own and patented it. That's not cool, man. Gotta do something about this. And if all it takes is standing on a street corner for a half an hour with a 5-minute handmade sign or posting a YouTube video, what are you waiting for?
Try being nice. You'd be surprised. I've been on the other side of that cashier, the cash register. I've been the cashier. And just be nice to the people you run into, and you'd be surprised. You can change someone's entire day, and that pays forward, folks. If we want to change the meme, the social meme from, I don't care, it's mine, and you're not having it, to, sure, go ahead, we'll trade, we'll barter, we'll share, because that's how we're ever going to get anywhere. So be nice to everybody around you. Just try it. You don't have to go crazy or, you know, if you don't feel comfortable going to a rally or demonstrating or anything like that, just try shifting from being a miserable sod to being a nice person and smiling at people, holding doors open for people. Be nice to the waitress. If she screws up your order, who cares?
Yeah, I do that all the time, actually. You know, you just do the opposite of what everybody else's behavior is. You know, most people, they'll go to the person and they'll go, okay, I want a number 3 with the curly fries. Yeah, how much is that? Okay, cool, and pay them. That's their conversation. I go, how are you doing today? And they go, a bit tired, eh? And I go, yeah, man, it really, really sucks, eh? I used to have a slave job too, but then I grow up. no, I've never done that. That's just cruel. And that's actually a bad example anyway. But yeah, I've compliment people. Like if they do a good job on something, right, or whatever, I don't just take it and say thank you. I'll actually, like I'm a fan of a New Zealand burger chain called Burger Fuel, right? And there have been occasions where the guy has made just a spectacular frickin' burger, something that just made you stop chewing for a second and just mull it over, you know? The damn farm burger. And I'll go up to the cashier and go, can I see the person who made this burger? You know, just kind of like almost angry sort of type of thing, like I'm going to lay a complaint. And then they go, I'm like, bro, this is like the best burger that I've ever had. You are a burger artiste. And then they laugh and they cackle, you know. That's the best compliment they get in that whole week. Maybe even a month or a year or something like that. Take me 3 seconds of effort to really improve somebody's working experience. And imagine if everybody was like that. Imagine if it was all social interaction. Imagine if everybody was actually kind and complimentary to each other, you know, like airplane peanuts. They're complimentary.
There's a tradition because my father's side of the family's from New York. And New Yorkers are, you know, notorious for tipping. I tip everybody. And I tip generously. And I don't care what kind of service I got. First of all, I know you live on the tips. And I know you get screwed every single day. You probably got screwed by the guy before me, and you're going to get screwed by the guy after me. And secondly, I know that you're living a life, and not everybody performs to the best of their ability every single moment of their life. We're human beings. We are affected. If we had a bad morning, if something happened, it affects us. But that has no bearing on whether or not you deserve to live or die. Absolutely. If I've got the money in my pocket, it's yours. Go ahead and take it. I don't care. It has nothing to do with the service or judging you or making you perform according to a certain standard so that you can feel like you're worthy of my, you know, $5 or $6 or whatever percentage, that whole tip calculator that a lot of people, I've known people who have like this little cheat sheet in their wallet, and they look at the total bill and they look at the percentage and they tip according to that. And I'm thinking, how ridiculous. Just if it was X amount of dollars and you've got, you know, a 20 or a 50, take the change and just hand it over. Who the hell cares?
Yeah, hey, the world thrives on the generosity of other people, and this is the reason why taxation is such a bad thing, is because people don't have any excess income to give away to other people in their time of need anymore, you know? What's the government done to all these charity organizations and things like that? I think Congressman Ron Paul used to work for a charity doctor's practice where people would pay $2 to see the doctor or free, you know?
Yes, and he did that for years, yeah.
And it's gone. It's freaking gone because they taxed all the spare money out of everybody that could have donated and given it into a government health program that costs 10 times as much with all the bureaucracy and takes 10,000 times as freaking long. Don't you get it? I think it's just the lack of personal responsibility and just realizing who you are and the situation that you're in and acting accordingly, accommodating other people's needs into your own and trying to work towards a better society every single day in every action that you do, or at least make an effort, try. You might fail miserably and just go, you know what, maybe I shouldn't have complimented that person because they're actually a really bad person. I think I'll just learn a lesson. You know, every bad thing that happens to you is a precursor to something good happening to you. You know, it's like a waveform. I think that, don't you reckon, Suzanne? Is that's how life is? It's like a radio wave. You know, it undulates. It goes up and down and up and down and up and down. Sometimes your life sucks, and people whose life is on a good part, you know, they'll help you get through those suckful times. And then when their life sucks, you're going through a good time, and you can help them through that. You know?
Yeah, if you're always that, my husband is always that guy. If you need help, he'll help you. It doesn't matter if he gets compensated for it. He's always, because whenever my husband needs something, it just magically appears. People want to help him because he's that guy. And he doesn't call in a favor. It just happens. Like, we have a neighbor next door. They've got a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old, and they, for unknown reason, started handing me all of their hand-me-downs, all the toys and all the girls' clothes. They have two daughters. So my daughter, I've got boxes of clothes that my daughter can wear for years to come. And I don't have to go out and buy her clothes. She's got a full wardrobe for probably the next 10 years sitting in boxes in my closet, just because whenever I bake cookies, I bake a little bit extra and I send a plate over. Just be that person.
It all comes back to you. That's what I've found. You know, I can go out and endlessly filming people's public meetings and their little protests and things like that, which nobody's turned up to. And then I get it up on YouTube for them. And then at some point later on, I badly need something and I don't know who could help me, and it's that person. It happens all the time. As soon as you start helping people, people start helping you. I think that sounds like a just society. That sounds like a moral fabric from which we can build a future. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com is my guest.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's our final segment here for today. What were we talking about over the break? Oh, yeah. People screwing you over and getting the advantage taken out of you. Because if you go around and be nice and do favors for everybody and stuff like that, and they never give you anything back, stop doing favors for those people. There have been quite a number of different groups that I've helped out over the years, extensively helped out. Like, they have no idea how many hours of work that I've done for them, and they've never, ever helped me in any way, shape, or form. Never shared an article of mine, never shared a single video, even the videos that I've made of them for them, they haven't even bothered to share them, you know, that kind of thing. And you go, I don't think I'm being appreciated or rewarded for any of my efforts that I've done of my own volition here. Not going to help that person out again. And you go out and you find other people to help. And sure enough, other people give you something back. Doesn't have to be financial or anything like that. They just give you a hand when it's necessary, just because you did. You know, that moral obligation thing. Like the van that we bought, with the generous donations of listeners for Sarah, so she can go out and do her gardening jobs and such, broke down within a month. And it's still in the shop. And my mate Dave, who owns the shop and sold us the car, said that he felt a moral obligation because he sold us a car that wasn't up to scratch to fix it, even though there is no law requiring him to. Okay, that's basically the kind of existence that I like to live as well. I like to give things, and if they mess up or anything, take responsibility and fix them, you know, that kind of thing. Remember Dr. Paul Connett coming over here doing his fluoride speech and stuff like that, and I had the little Bluetooth wireless microphones and cameras and GoPro and stuff all over him, and then I put up the video, and I'd put up the website a little bit wrong. You know, took me hours to edit and upload and everything like that. But because Dr. Paul Connett said, you know, the website's wrong there just in the start, and I had to redo the whole thing over, and I gladly did it because the information is freaking worth it to lots more than myself. In fact, you can go and see the talks of his that I've done on my YouTube channel, Mr. News Guerrilla Media, and search Dr. Paul Connett, world's leading authority on fluoride toxicity. You get really well informed out of that. Nobody else in New Zealand has ever put up anything about Paul Connett on YouTube. Nobody. Okay? There's 4 million people. At each time when I was filming them, there were at least 2 to 3 to 5 other people there with cameras. Nobody put anything up. Okay? One person always makes a difference. As I say, because I am that one person most of the time. and everybody talks about this, oh, we need the masses to awaken, we need the masses to do this and that and the other. The masses don't freaking matter, and they never freaking have. You don't need other people to approve of your lifestyle or your choices or your volunteer organizations or anything like that. You don't need anybody. You need a vision. You need purpose. And that makes everybody look up to you. Not you worry about how everybody looks down on you. Okay?
When I lived in Colorado, there was an establishment, a co-op restaurant, and also a place where you could buy organic food and from local farmers around the area. And on Sunday, everyone would take their overage and give it to the restaurant, and they would cook a meal, and you could sit down for free and eat with everyone in the town. Your kids would play with other kids. You'd sit and have a meal, good organic food from local farmers all over. They gave it freely. Nobody made a dime that day. And everyone just sat, and the people who cooked came out from the kitchen and sat down and ate, and you got to have conversations with people. You got to meet these people every single day, and they had a secondhand store underneath in the basement area. And if you didn't have the money to pay for the clothing or whatever it is that you wanted, they'd just let you have it. That's just one instance in my life where I was able to gratefully be around people that didn't care about making a buck. They cared about community, and they cared about the people that they lived with, and they wanted to be part of something bigger than a dollar bill.
See, they're just doing the direct opposite to what all of the other stuff tells you to do. You know, and that's the real key here. Have a look at whatever is going on that you don't like and just do the direct opposite.
Yes. And you'll feel better.
Be generous.
Yeah.
If people are listening to junk information, listen to good information. If people aren't passing on any decent advice, pass on decent advice. You know, it's pretty straightforward. It's not that hard to have a look at what's going on, know that it's wrong, and then think about an opposite way. Not that
exactly.
Hard.
Exactly.
It's just taking that first step as well. It's I don't know. How do you get fired up enough before you really get on that? You know, it's just again the anger, the rage. Oh my god, it just wakes you up something chronic. But you know. I almost feel bad if I actually woke somebody up, you know, made them think that everything that was a lie, and experience all the anger and depression and all the stuff that you go through being a truther, losing contact with your family members who think you're crazy, losing most of your friends that you hang out with and everything. This happened to me. This happened to pretty much everybody I know that's woken up in some way, shape, or form. Their entire life just kind of gets destroyed so it can be created again, like order out of chaos, as the Masons would say. What is it? I mean, I wonder, you know, Suzanne, maybe just by talking about this stuff, we're actually doing damage.
Well, I always talk to my listeners. I always answer every email. When I'm on Facebook and people, you know, chat with me, I talk with them. And I don't ignore anyone. And I interact with people as much as possible because I understand everybody's at a different level. And I probably don't know as much as I could or should. And I'm learning new things, and new things continue to shock me, and I can't believe it, and it throws me back for a loop for a minute. We're all in this together. So I make myself as accessible as possible because let's figure this out together. If we don't do this, the idea of coming together and community has been co-opted by communism. The idea itself is not bad. The idea of recycling and caring about the planet is not bad, but it's been taken over by eco-fascists. We can take these ideas back and implement them without all of the garbage and the control mechanisms that go along with the new version of it, and start to create a better world right underneath their feet.
That's right. Every single thing is being told to you is a lie. And I think that, well, basically the lie is society is going great, everything's wonderful, we've got all this convenience, we've got all this great education and the medical system, blah, 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 blah. If you made all those lies suddenly true, that would actually be a really cool society. What if we had a medical system that worked? What if we had an economy that was fair? What if we actually had low taxes? What if we had wars for legitimate reasons? Like if you're under attack, for example, and not going off and attacking people because they never threatened to attack you, but we're going to make up the fact that they got weapons and that we sold to them and then go and attack them. Imagine if the BS was true. That would be a great society, I think. Imagine if American Idol actually mattered. You know, like if you got people who were singing songs about reality up there. Original songs, and you're actually doing a competition to make an original band superstars that have got all the talent that they need and all the training that they need, but what they don't have is the coverage or the team management, and without record labels and all of that other junk that just gets all the artists into debt, so they've got to wind up working at Burger King on the weekends just in order to make ends meet, you know, that kind of thing. It's insane, right, man? You know, you can drive yourself nuts thinking about just how many things are wrong. Like, imagine if you like did a test, Suzanne, just sat here, and have you ever done thought flow, where you just got like a pencil and a bit of paper, and you're just writing down everything that comes into your mind?
No.
No. You know, I haven't done that since I was like 14, but it would be interesting to do, to just sit there and every single thought about everything that's bad and wrong with the world today just kind of come out on a bit of paper. I'd probably write a Bible.
Well, I think that would be great. Like, women are taught from an early age to deal with our logic, or our lack thereof, whatever, with pros and cons. So you sit there and write a column of all the good things and all the bad things, and then you base your decision on that, which column is bigger. And then you go ahead with your decision. But if we wrote down these pros and cons, maybe, of everything that's going on, maybe we could figure out how to do the exact opposite, or how to get through this, even in our own personal lives. And like we've been talking about, what you do affects everyone around you. No one lives in a bubble.
Yeah. But you can have a lack of faith in yourself and go, oh, well, what I do won't matter. And then you don't do anything, and then you don't matter. talk about a self-fulfilling prophecy. Come on. All right. This is going to be a good show today. I hope people have taken away some advice from, and I don't want to seem arrogant like I know everything. I know frack all, okay? I just know a lot more than some people who know less than frack all. We'll be back tomorrow with another show at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.